Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Wisconsin flips red in the presidential race as Donald Trump secures a second term. Coming up, we'll have a full election recap. Plus, Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin wins re-election, creating a rare split-ticket outcome in the Badger State. Plus, Assembly Republicans hold on to their majority under new voting maps. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats make some significant gains. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for November 8th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, Wisconsin flipped again here in the battleground state to a red state after it was blue in 2020. Once again, just speaking the true colors of the 50-50 state, looking at the U.S. Senate race, we had a split ticket. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that in a little bit. Let's talk top line results here with between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump, now President-elect Donald Trump. He, of course, came out on top here in the battleground state, winning by about 30,000 votes. Now, of course, turnout here in Wisconsin, too, was the largest that has seen in terms of raw numbers of any election in state history, which is being celebrated, I think, you know, by both parties. But there's a lot of takeaways that we want to get into, JR, right away, looking at the race between Trump and Kamala Harris. Now, Harris did perform better in a lot of areas of the state than Joe Biden. But ultimately, looking at the state, Trump also did better in almost every region, reliably red counties across the state. And that was kind of the big difference maker here.
Look, back in 1992, Bill Clinton's campaign mentioned it's economy stupid. It's the same thing. Take away all the other stuff, all the messaging, transgender issues, abortion, everything else. It's still the economy drives everything. And looking at the polls, I think we got to talk about this. Like, there was a feeling of, okay, things might shift one way or the other in the end. We would see the signs of what was going to happen. So if Kamala Harris had won, I would say, okay, it was because abortion still was a very important issue. Donald Trump has high negatives, et cetera. If Trump won, it was going to be economic factors. And if you look at the polls, every single top issue other than abortion was in his favor. And the ones that mattered the most to people were the economy, number one, by far. Most Americans in the country think are going the wrong direction. You don't see a party in power often hold on to the White House when people are unhappy about the economy, the personal economic situation, and the country going the wrong direction. That just doesn't happen. And Kamala Harris failed to articulate how she would be different from Joe Biden. There are a couple ads that people told me were very good by Trump. Now, his messaging wasn't always on point, shall we say. The week before the election, there was a rally in New York City, which a comedian made a racist joke about Puerto Rico. There was Trump's performance in Milwaukee last Friday night. There was an interesting display of a microphone stand. It's a family show, so we'll leave it at that, what he did. He rambled, talked about the weave and his very fertile mind. Like, these aren't the coherent thoughts of somebody who's, like, on point right to the very end, right? Didn't matter, because he connected with people, working class especially, on the economy. And if you look at a couple of ads that he ran that really kind of hammered that home, was one, Kamala Harris, on an interview saying, asked, what would you have done differently than Joe Biden, and could not articulate anything. He said, I can't think of anything. How do you be a change agent that you're promising to do if you can't think of a single thing? Like, even people told me, just say, I would have attacked the immigration issue sooner. Right. Something like that.
An answer.
Yes. Two, I don't know that transgender issues drove the election, okay, but it was definitely something in the air a lot. There's one ad that Trump that people pointed to me this week where it had Kamala Harris, in her own words, advocating for taxpayer money to fund sex change surgeries for people who are even in prison. You wove together in that ad immigration, crime, transgender stuff, and the use of taxpayer money. Effective spot in getting people who may be going, well, I think Kamala Harris is okay, to go, ooh, that's a little bit kind of maybe too far. All that said, again, the main point is the economy drove things. Kamala Harris couldn't show how she'd do things differently. And Donald Trump, people go, you know, they've forgotten a little bit about the chaos that happened for 4 years while he's president, but they remember, like, you know, things cost less. 4 years ago when he was still in office. That drove things.
It was often what we heard about. It's just, you know, the economic headwinds she could not overcome. I mean, granted, she had 107 days to try and, you know, change the trajectory of this race. That's really difficult to do, I think, for any candidate. There's some people, like Republicans, pointing to, well, it's her. It was the candidate's problem. Looking at the issues, I mean, it really wasn't. I mean, more people went to vote and said, I'm not doing so hot right now, you know, and, you know, I'm going to look the other way. You know, he does say some crazy stuff. I mean, these are the things that I've heard over the past few months. I don't care what he says. You know, sometimes it kind of, you know, irks me a little bit. But, I'm going to vote for my pocketbook. I'm going to vote for my family. I'm going to vote for certain issues when it comes to the economy. I think it was also, you kind of hinted at this, it was a little bit of the true test of the abortion issue as well. Some Democrats told me quietly that I think we focus too much on the issue. Of course, Harris had her economic plan, but they believe, Democratic strategists, that she didn't have enough time to sell that and convince people that I'm going to make life better for you. So that was very difficult to overcome. Also, just looking at certain regions of the state, too, that we want to highlight. First, let's look at Dane County. I mean, it was the number one goal, I would say, well, maybe one of many goals of Republicans here in the state, is to perform better in Dane County. Well, they did. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump got to 23%. That was their goal. And he got there. Yes, that is better than 2016. That is better than 2020. It was just enough to put him over the edge, to chip away at Democrats' advantage in this very strong liberal base here in Dane County, that it pushed him over to the edge and ultimately handing him the 10 electoral votes here in Wisconsin. Also, let's take a look at the WOW counties. I think this is particularly interesting because Harris performed better than Biden in 2020, as you can see on your screen, in Washington, Ozaukee, and Washington. So they did reach those thresholds that they wanted to. Trump didn't. I mean, he was down in every single one of the WOW counties. But it didn't matter, JR. Is this maybe a different strategy or test that maybe Republicans should be looking at?
Well, he set a new floor of what a Republican can do in Waukesha County and win. I knew going in that we were going to get late returns out of Milwaukee, places like Oshkosh and Green Bay and Kenosha had central counts. But Waukesha is pretty reliably done like around 9:30, 9:45, 10 o'clock. And I can usually tell the Republican candidate, if he or she's below a certain mark in Waukesha County, they're in trouble. I have never seen anybody win statewide who's a Republican or conservative in any race at any level at 58 point whatever percent he was in Waukesha County. So as I was watching, I thought, this is a major red flag. Turns out the erosion in the rural, in the WOW counties continues. Mm-hmm. Not great for Republicans long-term in suburban areas. I can reverse that. But then you look around the state and saw everything else going Trump's way. Better numbers in Milwaukee and Dane. I think there's two other counties I found, that like Door County, for example.
Yeah.
A quote-unquote bellwether, that went for Harris, okay. But most places, Trump did better. I know you've dug into, like, demographics and student wards. What did you see in terms of, like, how college kids voted this election?
Well, I mean, ultimately what ended up happening is more men, which is kind of the generic message that we're hearing across the nation, voted for the former president. He did very well with young voters, especially too, white male voters. He also made inroads with black voters here in Wisconsin. So I took a look at from 2020 to 2024 UW-Madison numbers. So I'm gathering certain wards where students primarily go and vote, and Republicans ultimately did better. They actually flipped one county on UW-Madison campus, which is something that, you know, was almost unheard of just a few years ago. They also flipped a county in UW-La Crosse, so another victory for Republicans. Eau Claire as well. But Democrats, ultimately, they still got more raw votes, mm-hmm. looking back from 4 years ago. UW-Milwaukee, Marquette, Harris still gathered and mustered more votes than compared to President Joe Biden 4 years ago. So that was promising. Like, again, she did what she had to do. But it just comes down to the fact that Republicans peeled away some more voters. I thought that was probably the most surprising headline, too, specifically for UW-Madison campus, because going back to 2016, Hillary Clinton got a bigger vote threshold than Harris did. That's 8 years ago. And since then, since 2016, going to 2020, 2022, Evers' victory, I mean, that vote threshold almost reached up to 90% on UW-Madison campuses. Harris was only roughly about 78%. So that was kind of a big difference maker, especially on college campuses. Yes, Democrats still showed up. They really had a really big organization, especially on college campuses. They were banking on them to show up. It's not like they didn't. It's just that looking at the raw numbers, more men also just voted for Trump, too. And, of course, Dane County is getting bigger and bigger, too.
Yeah, like in politics, they're saying Victory is a thousand fathers, defeat only one. We talked about Turning Point USA, efforts to turn out voters. Are they the reason why college campuses went more Republican? Possibly. Is it Donald Trump going on Joe Rogan's podcast and talking to the bro vote, quote unquote? Possibly. But also worth noting that the red wave we saw nationally crashed lighter here in Wisconsin and other places. So if you look at Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, the blue wall states, all three shifted to the right in this election. Wisconsin shifted less than Michigan and Pennsylvania. Why? It could be the Democratic ground game. Ben Wicker, State Party Chair, has been a phenomenal fundraiser. They built infrastructure. Did that help gird Wisconsin a little bit more against that red wave? If you would have told me a year ago Wisconsin's going to vote to the left of Michigan and Pennsylvania after what happened in 2020, I'd have thought you're crazy. Like, how would that possibly happen? I don't know Michigan and Pennsylvania well enough to know like what could have driven that, but still, it's notable that Wisconsin saw less of a shift than other states, and so it's not going to placate Dems or make them feel better, but the machine they've built maybe had a role in that.
Let's also just briefly kind of talk big picture, right? I think there's a lot of Democrats that still have a lot of heartburn of what happened. A lot of people were surprised, specifically if you voted for Harris, that this was the end result. But if you even just look back at 2016, when the former president was first in office, you know, Republicans were somewhat, in the years after that, political losers, to put it bluntly. There's always this swinging pendulum. We're going to have another midterm election in 2 years. We know we're a very purple state. We have a state Supreme Court race first. But that's just to, you know, keep in mind. There's always going to be some type of, you know, refute on the ticket. We see it a lot here. And that's kind of what we just want to, you know, remind people that there could be a lot more changes in the future.
In 2004, George W. Bush won re-election, and the word out of Washington from Republicans was, we're going to create a permanent majority by allowing people to invest their Social Security in the market, create an investor class, and we will keep Democrats in the dark for an eternity. 2 years later, they got shellacked in the midterm elections. In 2008, Republicans was becoming a regional party stuck in the Southeast and parts of the West and the Sun Belt, and that was going to be it. 2 years later, they had the Tea Party wave. Things swing in politics. So as you hear all these people like announce these big pronouncements about what happened and like there are problems Democrats have the working class, which they did this election.
Oh, absolutely.
Are they permanent? We'll see.
Yeah.
But remember that things swing, especially in Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin also spoke its true purple colors this week as well, because it was the first time in many, many years that one party went for the U.S. Senate and another elected a president. And we're talking about Senator Tammy Baldwin securing re-election in a very, very tight race. This was such a rare instance that has never happened since 1968, I believe. It's been that long. Now, if you look back in midterm elections, we did just see this in 2020, a split ticket result. That was a midterm, though. That's why we're comparing this with the presidency and U.S. Senate. Tammy Baldwin ultimately received more raw votes. But, you know, there's also this messaging by Republican candidate Eric Hovde that, you know, Thomas Leaguer, you know, that Baldwin planted this candidate to take votes away from him. I mean, ultimately, Hovde underperformed in almost every county that Trump won. So it's, you know, it's not so much about this other guy that he's kind of pointing blame to. It's that he just underperformed, specifically also in rural Wisconsin, where we know Tammy has had pretty big success in rural counties, something that a lot of Democratic candidates are unable to pull those certain margins in those red counties, specifically, you know, appealing to farmers.
Look, as we sit here Friday morning, Hovde's not conceded yet. The margin is within, as we speak, the 1% that's allowed for a second-place finisher to request a recount. However, you have to pay for it. You have to be 0.25% or less to get it. Taxpayers pick up the tab. I've been through recounts. They don't switch even a few hundred votes with 3.4 million cast, let alone 30,000 votes. So the question is, when's Hovde going to concede, or is he going to ask for a recount to try and go through that exercise? I don't know. But talking about Thomas Leaguer, I asked that question because, you know, Hovde on election night or Wednesday morning, they said, this has been called sooner if I hadn't have that plant, which it wasn't Baldwin who put him there. Democrats did help Leaguer get on the ballot. Don't forget, Republicans helped Cornel West and Jill Stein in this election. Republicans likely funded ads hitting Tammy Baldwin about Palestine. So both sides play that game. That said, if you took all of Thomas Leaguer's votes right now and gave them all to Eric Hovde, Baldwin would still be up by a few hundred votes. And again, that would have been us in white-knuckle-like recount territory.
Sure.
But probably doesn't flip the results even on a recount. Number two, there was no question that Donald Trump liked Eric Hovde. So if you are a America First guy who went and voted for Thomas Leaguer, you're probably a Trump supporter, right? Donald Trump campaigned with Eric Hovde. He endorsed Eric Hovde. RFK Jr. endorsed Eric Hovde. There was no doubt Eric Hovde was Donald Trump's guy. Why, if you are an America First supporter, would you not vote for Eric Hovde? Well, it could be that he owns a California bank, the California mansion, the plethora of ads run against him that drove his negatives. Remember, the last Marquette poll before the election, Tammy Baldwin saw her negatives go up, 45 favorable, 50 unfavorable. Hovde was upside down by 12 points, 36-48. So if you weren't happy with Hovde, you might not have wanted to vote for him, right? It's like, we have a choice. I've seen people blame, well, Phil Anderson, Republicans want to blame Phil Anderson. We have a Libertarian Party in Wisconsin. Like, they are active. They're always on the ballot. You can't, like, assume that nobody else can run but a Democrat and a Republican. Eric Hovde failed to coalesce these folks. And why? Could be those attacks. And then, two, Baldwin got more raw votes than Kamala Harris. That's
not... I was just going to bring that up. Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit unusual. Ron Johnson did it in 2016 with Trump on the ballot the first go-around. But that's a credit to Baldwin, people have told me, and the work she has done to build... get the Farm Bureau Federation's endorsement, you know, things like that, which she's kind of built this cross-party appeal.
And looking at the Wow counties, too, Harris did outperform Baldwin in those areas, too. So it's kind of just this mixed bag that we see across the state. Baldwin did finally address the media after a very long day, evening, going into Wednesday. A lot of people forgot what day it was, declaring victory. She asked Hovde to, please concede in the race. He did say prior to the election that once the election's results, he would accept them. And during her speech, too, she said that she looks forward to working with President-elect Trump and also still trying to fight for Wisconsinites, specifically some reproductive rights issues. Let's just take a listen from Baldwin on her victory speech.
The way we won this race is the way I've always approached this job, and that is we did everything, everywhere, all at once. I travel to red, blue, purple, rural, suburban, urban parts of our state. I listen to people. I really listen to people, and then deliver for them. And in turn, these Wisconsinites showed up for me.
I'll tell you about that afterward.
All right, let's move on to congressional races here in Wisconsin. Only one change that we kind of really want to highlight looking at your screen. Almost everyone secured re-election, and the newcomer is Tony Weed in the 8th Congressional District. Also, probably one of the most closely contested races in Congress here in Wisconsin was Derek Van Orden's race as well. So, Jer, any takeaways from the evening?
Just worth knowing, Tony Weed also becomes a congressman pretty soon. Remember, he won both a special election in Philadelphia in Mike Gallagher's term, because Gallagher resigned this spring, and he gets the full two-year term in January. So once votes are certified, Tony Weed becomes Congressman Weed. With Van Orden, 2 years ago, Democrats pulled out that race at the end. He won by 11,000 votes and change. This year, they actually outspent Van Orden. He won by 11,000 votes and change. Now, the question is for Van Orden, okay, he has not shown any signs of changing his stripes, if you will. Remember, he yelled "you lies" at Joe Biden or State of the Union speech back in this early this year. Got into some kind of incident with an anti-war protester at the Republican National Convention. The whole thing was Senate pages. You can get away with that in a good year, people have told me. What happens if there's a bad cycle and you don't moderate that kind of approach to the public and others? Is it going to bite you in the butt someday? So that's what they're going to watch of Van Orden. He's shown no signs of it. But that might be something to watch if there's a bad cycle for him out there.
All right. Still moving down the ballot in this order, we're now going to focus on the legislature. Democrats were able to chip away at Republicans' majority in both chambers, but Democrats ultimately fell short of their goal to try and get the majority in the state assembly. So Republicans ended up maintaining 54 assembly seats, which is down from their current 64-34 majority. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Democrats gained 4 seats to narrow Republicans' majority there as well, from 21-11 advantage to now an 18-15 split. Republicans, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Representative Tyler August, addressed the press the day after the election, claiming victory. They're very happy with their progress, despite the new maps that make them much more competitive than they are for, over 10 years now. I think it's almost 13 years with the new maps and the change. Meanwhile, I also caught up with Senator Jeff Smith from Oak Cliff. Clare to talk about, you know, their success in the Senate. So let's just hear from both of them, and then we'll kind of get more into the weeds of which seats were flipped.
If you were to ask most people in the state of Wisconsin if Assembly Republicans would be standing here today at 54 seats, given everything that we were up against, including a gerrymandered map that the governor instilled using his liberal allies on the state Supreme Court, that most people wouldn't believe it, but we believed we could be here the entire time, and our candidates believed in it too.
All of the seats that we put our efforts into and targeted, we were able to come out on top, and we're in a great position right now, and I'm really excited about what the future brings in, as far as a legislature that actually might work together.
All right, let's dive a little bit deeper into this, starting in the Assembly. You know, like I said, despite new maps, Republicans are saying, you know, we had a pretty good night.
Yeah, they were performing someplace. We'll talk more about the Assembly a little bit and places where they did very well, but the maps create a path for Democrats to win the majority, but they need a good performance top of the ticket. Kamala Harris couldn't pull that performance to the point where they needed it. Worth noting, Greta Neubauer, the minority leader, is going to run for another two-year term. They have leadership elections on the 19th of November, I believe. In the Senate, looking at the national map for Democrats, there aren't many really true bright spots. Yes, Tammy Baldwin won in Wisconsin, but she had a nail-biter. Senate Democrats, though, like, had a sweep. So there were five races to watch when you started this cycle. One kind of fell off the map with Brad Paff and Stacey Klein, a supervisor for Trempealeau County. Wasn't really that contested. Dem leaning seat, Paff was kind of favored, and he won. The other four, though, were the ones we were watching the closest. Democrats performed well in all of them. I mean, they weren't like nail-biter races. They were close. Some were close. Mm-hmm. But they did very well. Eighth Senate District. Jody Habish-Sinikin beats Dewey Strobel in a swingy to slight GOP lean seat in the suburbs. Now, she outspent him like 3.5-1, or her and her allies.
Yeah.
She put $5 million on TV by herself. That is a budget for a congressional campaign, a contested congressional campaign in Wisconsin, all on her own. That was crazy money. Up in the 30th District in Green Bay, Jamie Wall had several million dollars on TV. Now, that one kind of petered out because Jim Rafter, the Alawes GOP Alawes Village president, kind of didn't raise a lot of money by himself. Senate Republicans basically pumped all the cash into his campaign to help him out. Wall just kind of like dominated that race. Go down to north of Madison, this kind of like area a little north of the city and rural counties. Sarah Kieski, a Democrat, outspent Joan Baldwin, a Republican state senator. That was, you know, people kind of felt like going into Election Day, Joan had a chance to survive in the end. Again, not there was a blowout, but she overperformed a little bit, but not enough to keep that close. And the thing to note is that both Baldwin and Strobel in the last days were doing straight-to-camera ads defending the record on IVF and birth control.
Right.
That means you're on the defensive. Like, you are in trouble doing that. And then finally, the 18th Senate District. We talked about that one before. I couldn't quite figure out why Republicans were investing in that race because it's a 54% Dem seat. They argued, oh, Kristen Alfheim, Appleton Alderwoman, she might underperform. She got 53.7%, right in line with what you'd expect with a Democrat in a brand new seat, open race. So really a solid performance from top to bottom for Democrats. And now they have widened their path in 2026. They had to win, they had to net three seats. Win three to get you 19-14. There are three seats on the ballot in 26 you have a chance to go after, and then one defend. That's what you needed. Well, now they only need to win net two seats in 2026. That is a big bonus because Jeff Smith is in a swingy seat. You could, I'm not saying Jeff's going to lose. That's years from now.
Yeah. Right.
No predictions even next week. But if you had a loss somewhere, you've got more paths to pick up the majority than you had before. That's a big win for Democrats.
Right, absolutely. All right, let's move on just quickly. We're going to briefly touch on some leadership changes that we have seen already and what could come in the Assembly. And these are just the elections for leadership positions in each chamber. In the Senate, they had their elections yesterday. Senator Mary Falskowski is now going to be Senate president. She's going to replace Chris Kapunga. Caucus vice chair, just the changes there, is Cabrera-Guevara from Apple, a Republican. She's going to be there. Looking at the Assembly, these are just some of the contested ones, else ones that you see on your screen. There's going to be a race for caucus secretary and assistant majority leader. So we'll see where those end up. But those elections in the Assembly are still a few weeks away.
Yeah. Noting in the Senate, Mary Falskowski replacing Chris Kapunga. Remember, Kapunga and Demi Levin here, the majority leader who's returning as majority leader, contentious relationship. Mary Felskowski transferred $145,000 to the committee, to elect Republican Senate this year. Cappy didn't transfer anything. If you're in leadership, you have what are called dues, right? So Devin Lemon, who did $200,000 to CSRS, Howard Markline, the finance co-chair, did like $100,000. Cap didn't do anything. Whereas Felskowski was helping candidates as well. Cap did money for, I think, Strobel and Baldwin, and that was it on the ballot. Mary gave to all five. Like, she laid the foundation for a challenge, and Cap texted me before the election on Thursday that he's dropping out, essentially, because he didn't have the votes, and he called Mary. So that relationship with Kappinga and LeMahieu now becomes LeMahieu and Felskowski are much more aligned on how to do things. But at 18 votes,
right?
How do they manage things? Because they've got Kappinga's a no vote on a lot of stuff this past session. Julian Bradley's no vote. Steve Noss, I think, and maybe voted for a budget my entire career in covering politics. So it narrows the margin to do stuff in the Senate quite a bit with the numbers they have.
All right, and we're going to get to stock picks, and we're kind of going back to the Assembly with rising this week because Assembly Republicans did also very well, especially maintaining some seats that were more reliably blue under the new map. So rising this week is Robin Voss.
Look, 50 wasn't enough for Robin. He needed to have 54-ish to have a manageable caucus. The reason why is there are several members who don't like Robin Voss, who will not support him for leader. If he had come back at 51, 52, that could have been, okay, how does Robin get out of that jam? He smartly recruited candidates, or won in one seat and got two recumbents to run again. I want to highlight the 53rd Assembly District up in the Apple in the Neenah Menasha area. Former Up Dean Coffert won, now by several hundred votes. It wasn't a wipeout, but that's a 53% Dem seat. You got a former state lawmaker, former mayor of Neenah. He won that seat. Jody Rodriguez in Oak Creek, Dem-leaning seat, again, about the same numbers, won. Again, not a blowout, but getting her to run again in a difficult seat was a big win. And Todd Novak in Dodgeville, also about the same numbers for a Democratic seat. He wins yet again when he's been targeted. Those are examples where Robin smartly recruited good people to run in tough seats, and it helped to maintain that majority that's a workable majority.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Jesse Rodriguez race was about 800 votes different, so very close one there. Mix this week, Governor Tony Evers.
All right, Governor, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Run or not? Now, I know it's 20 is a long ways away, but look, however things turned out on Tuesday, there had been pressure on Evers for 26. Now, if Harris had won, it would have been, okay, Governor, we need you to run because you're a proven fundraiser, a two-term incumbent. It's going to be a tough environment in 2026 because we have the White House. Remember, the party in power in the White House almost always struggles in midterms. The exceptions for my career have been 2022 because of the Dobbs decision and 2002 because it was post-9/11 election. Now the pressure is, Governor, we can't screw this up. Okay, Trump's in the White House. We should have a good environment, barring something crazy happening. We can't have a 5- or 6-person primary, produce somebody who is bruised and battered and broke, maybe not in line with most of the state. We can't risk that. We need you to run. He's going to be in his 70s. He's in his 70s, though.
Yeah.
Does he have that fire to do that? Also, on the Republican side, okay, who you start talking about? I guarantee you Tom Tiffany.
I was just going to say.
Already thinking about running.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Shulman, a Washington County executive. He'll kick the tires on it at least. People will toss out all kinds of names. Some of the private sector might emerge. Pat Teston, state senator. He's won re-election Tuesday. So there's no time like the present. Start thinking about the future. And some private sector guy might come out of the woodwork to run, or gal. Come to run for governor in 2 years.
All right, and let's get following the, real quick as Milwaukee Central count because, it was a little bit of the surprise on election night after, due to human error, someone left open a door on a tabulator and they ended up recounting a little over 30,000 votes, which again pushed back more and more and more time for them to recount
so
everything.
These doors, they cover the part where you put the thumb drive in to get the votes. You close it, seal it with tape, and lock it. They didn't lock it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lock it, that's a problem. So they started over. Central count was a mess once again. 4 years ago, the votes came in like 4:30 in the morning. They assured us a couple weeks ago, hey, it's not going to be as bad. Then they got 107,000 absentee ballots. Then they had this mistake. Then Ron Johnson and Brian Schimming show up down there and say, what's going on? This is a mess. And Democrats said it was a mess. How do you fix it, though? Well, the early count bill, which didn't pass this past session, is one way to fix it. Allow clerks to be processing ballots the day before an election. Now, Scott Krug is the chair of the Assembly Campaign Elections Committee. He told me he wants to talk about that, but also a Florida-style system where Florida, you can process the ballot the second you get it. Florida had all the returns out like 2 or 3 hours of polls closing on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Much bigger state than we are. How do they do that? Well, they process things immediately. Krug will have that conversation. Now, the problem is, whenever you do an election bill in Wisconsin, you open the door to the base saying, a Republican base saying, we want all this stuff. If you load up my conspiracy theorist Christmas tree, Evers will never sign it. So can you get a clean early count clean bill that the governor will like and sign and then actually address this problem for the future?
Because it's a bipartisan issue, yeah. But there's always someone putting a thorn in it. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.